Alrighty, everyone, welcome back to On the Gravel.
Happy Monday.
Happy no race this weekend, but even though there was no race, we still got some great news to be talking about.
Some Red Bull drama.
Yep, Red Bull drama, some Mercedes drama, and then just kind of talking about some of the things that have been happening on the grid. And
a couple things we also may have missed
absolutely,
last week.
Absolutely. Just because there was a lot of things that happened in both the F1 and the FIA race. So very exciting things. Starting off, I think we're going to go right into the FIA pin incident, as this is being called. But for those who don't know, first FIA race was last week. And
F1 Academy,
thank you. And it went well. It was a good race. Dorian Pin was by far the fastest woman.
She dominated the whole week.
Absolutely. But there was a little bit of drama at the end of the race where she crossed the finish line and she didn't have comms on her car anymore. There was some issue that happened around like lap 6 or 7 where she just lost all team communications with the car. And going into the final lap, she's coming down the straight towards the finish line. And like, you can see the checkered flag from one angle, but if you've done any research and kind of looked into what her onboard camera was viewing, you can't see the flag at all. And
pretty sure there's a one of the, what's it called? LED video boards blocking it, like the ones that display blue flags, yellow flags,
if any of those information,
all that kind of stuff.
But
yeah, it's right in front of the checkered flag box.
And so she didn't see it. And she continues racing at full race pace for another, I believe, lap and a half.
Surprised the car didn't run out of fuel.
That was a thing that a lot of people were pointing out. But I mean, I understand from her point of view and from the things that have happened that, you know, if you don't see the checkered flag, you think the race is still going, so you're going to obviously keep racing how it is. But like at the same time, the scoreboard or the video board was in the way. The person waving the flag did it all wrong. And
yeah, if you look at it, he's kind of just like limp. He's kind of like, it's literally just like raising his hand up and down.
The first race, Susie Wolf was the flag bearer, and she was doing it correctly, where you do the figure eight, where you can see the whole flag.
Well, I'm not surprised. It's Susie Wolf.
Yeah, but then no one knows who the second person was, but obviously it was not that good because there was a lot of issues. And so because she was going full speed for another lap and a half, she continued and then got red flagged to get her to slow down and finally come into the pits and finish the race, where she won the race. So she goes to the podium. They do the podium celebration. She wins. Lewis comes and congratulates her. That was a huge part of the talking point last week.
Mm-hmm.
But then afterwards, it is discussed that essentially because of her actions that she didn't follow the rule of failing to slow down after the checkered flag. So
it's like understandable because, you know, it's obviously dangerous to continue racing at full race pace when you know, everybody's slowing down at that point. But
if it's also like a track like Monza where people run out, it becomes a huge issue of safety and like spectators. So there's a lot of issues with it. And at the end of the day, it's not really her fault. And she got a 20-second penalty and went from P1 to P9, losing the first race win.
Which I think is,
I mean,
that's
obviously they're going to appeal this just because of how many nuances and things that have happened. And all of this is on camera too, which makes it
very easy to go over, I feel like.
Yeah, very easy to overturn in theory, but like there's plenty of evidence to support her not being able to see the flag theory. And it sucks because this was a very good first race. It was a very exciting first race.
Yeah.
And we're already getting into some turmoil. So,
and like also to the people who say, you know how, especially given it's such a short race, you know, given the people who are like, oh, it's like it's a 13 lap race. How are you not counting the laps down in your head? Like, it's not hard to count to 13. I feel like that's the last thing that's going through your head while you're, you know, racing at full race pace.
Try telling a NASCAR driver exactly. to keep what lap they're driving around on a circle. It's like it's
their laps are like 45 seconds long. I would lose count so quickly.
Yeah, and it's not easy. And it's easier to know where you are on the track and kind of be like, okay, I've completed another lap, than really knowing what lap you're on.
Yeah, I have almost no doubt that this will get overturned, but I don't know if it's like a statement or that kind of thing. 20 seconds is incredible.
And
I think
it's just the like they didn't modify this penalty because she did an extra lap and a half or anything. Like, no, this is the 20 second penalty for this. I mean, I don't know. It's like you have people that check the races beforehand. Like, we had the issues with covers for the last F1.
At Las Vegas.
But it's like, okay, so we now know drain covers are important to go check out. Wouldn't another thing be like the visibility of the flag from the finish line? I would imagine just having one person walk down the grid on the finish line would allow someone to.
I mean, they do their grid walks every Thursday.
These
tracks also have to be like, I think the term is like homodulated and accepted by the FIA. How do you not see that as an issue? Like, you know, when you're going over the track, and maybe that is a huge fault of the person bearing the flag on that second race. But I feel like having a video board directly in the way of the checkered flag box is something that I wouldn't make that mistake. And, you know, maybe that's in hindsight saying that, but I feel like it's a pretty simple thing not to do.
I think it's having someone who's knows what they're doing with the flag would have helped. But two, she lost comms too. Like,
I was going to say, could you also say that's a design fault in the Mercedes, or not the Mercedes, but just the essentially F4 car that they're using for F1 Academy? You know, like a design failure in the sense that, you know, these overheat really easily and then it messes with all that kind of stuff.
In theory, it could, because
like a cooling issue you need to fix.
But I mean, to counter that, these are stock cars. Mm-hmm. So if one car was having that problem, wouldn't all those cars be having that problem?
Yeah, that's true.
So I didn't hear anything about any
other
drivers.
Especially with F1 Academy, I don't actually know how much variance there is between teams. Like, I know with F1, of course, it's everything. You know, F2, it's more like powertrain, that kind of thing. I have no idea how it is for F4. I know they're all supplied by the same chassis maker. I believe it's Dallara, but like from there on, I don't know what it is. I think they might all have different engines as well, but yeah, that's pretty much my knowledge base on that.
I mean, I just don't think it's fair for her. Obviously, it's one of those things where it's like you won the race fair and square, and because of the circumstances that happened to you during the race, which are out of your control.
I think it's also a much bigger deal because she was the, you know, actual race winner. You know, if this was like somebody finishing,
if this was P3, who cares?
No, I wouldn't even say P3. If you're on the podium, I think it's a big deal.
Big deal. Okay.
But like, I mean, I don't want to lose a podium to that.
I don't want to lose points to
or
that.
You know what? Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I think this is also rooted in the fact that she won the race. I think because there's every car's behind her, she's not seeing cars in front of her.
That's where
down.
A lot of people were saying, were like, oh my God, I just looked outside and it is snowing.
It's 25 degrees here today, by the way.
Anyways, getting off the depressing snow. What was I saying?
Yeah. About her finishing P1, so there's no cars ahead.
That was a big talking point I saw on like Reddit forum posts and stuff where it's like, oh, even if she won the race and the cars behind her were slowing down, at some point in that lap and a half, she would have caught up. But I countered with, well, if they're just doing a cool down lap and going into the pits and she's still in front of them,
she's not going to catch up to them.
Yeah, I was going to say, she's not going to see anyone on there. So it makes sense where it's like, she just kept driving. But it does change where it's like, okay, if I see the person in front of me slow down, I know the race is over now, too, just because they are slowing down. That means they won.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can fault, like, because in that sense, it's like, okay, now we want you to look back at the cars behind you when you finish.
Okay, where's my rear view mirror?
If this is like anything like F1, Max could stop on the finish line for like half a minute before he saw anyone and could cross the line. So it's like, I don't know how you fix this. I don't know how you fix this issue without...
Move the video board. That's
obviously move the video board. That's the simple thing. But, like, how do you justify your actions now? And how is this going to affect everything down the line? Like,
I don't think it'll set a bad precedent. I think the FIA will
do the right thing.
Accept the appeal.
Oliver's alarm's going off. Thank you.
My apologies. I think that will actually be overturned pretty easily.
We'll see in the next week.
I don't see any issue with that.
Red Bull still in the news for all the wrong reasons.
I want to put an apology out there to everybody. I'm so sorry. This is week five that we're talking about this, but it's too incredible.
There's
not to
so
speak
much
about.
Happening that we just got to keep talking about it. And I hate having to keep just putting wood on the fire, but
so what did Raven do for you? He made a whole timeline.
I made a timeline of everything. It was very exciting to read through this. So I think
it's kind of like a movie script. Yeah, I feel like you can make a TV series.
We'll just
kind of
bounce through this and do every other point, I believe, and kind of give our thoughts. But yeah, this is annoying, but there's so much interesting things.
It's so juicy.
It's so interesting. But rounding up what we've had happen so far, on February 5th, report by Dutch publication Die Telegraaf, something to remember later in this timeline, that Red Bull GmbH launched an investigation into Christian Horner, the team principal of Red Bull.
2 weeks down the line, you have the F1 and FIA making statements saying that they're aware of what's going on with all the Red Bull drama, but they're not going to interject and make a comment or do anything about it.
Which, if you are a parenting business of like a company competing for this, very smart. Don't talk.
Don't make it a noise.
That's pretty normal. But about a week later, on February 25th, Ford CEO Jim Farley wrote a letter saying this needs to be finished ASAP, and we, Ford, do not accept this behavior in our partners. This is something that I think isn't getting as enough attention as it should be, because Ford is the only engine supplier that is not Mercedes, Ferrari, or
RB Powertrains and Renault.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's A, the only American engine supplier, and B, the only one that is one team? Or is Alpine engine one team too?
So Renault supplies Alpine and Alpine alone.
Okay.
Ford will supply Red Bull
and
V-Carb, yes. You know it's really bad when you're... Partners are starting to call you out on this. So a couple days later, on February 28th, Red Bull comes to a conclusion on their investigation, dismiss everything. Not really surprised about that. But it doesn't mean the end of everything that's going on.
Absolutely not. One day later, the files are leaked. Now, this is a point that we are going to talk about for a while, just because there's a lot of speculation
about
this. It's a
bit suspicious.
Yes. A lot of people who have seen the leaks will say, okay, everything just looks kind of simple in a way, for terms.
I mean, when I saw them, I thought somebody was literally doing this as a joke. You know, like, it looked so, like, poorly written.
ChatGPT pictures. Like, the quality of the pictures just don't make sense.
Well, it also almost felt like the things Christian Horner were saying, it didn't feel like it was coming from a human being either.
It didn't sound like it was coming from an adult. It sounded like it was coming from someone who's closer in our generation and the way we speak. But
who knows? Maybe Christian Horner is trying to like get in with that, get jiggy with it, get with a younger woman kind of thing.
With it? Jesus, dude. Anyways,
that's what those younger kids say, right?
Yeah. Anyways, this was a huge thing. If you get a chance or find the files anywhere, whatever you do, do not look at file 76. Just a fair warning. But everything else is okay. And there are some questionable photos. One of the photos near file 76 is just a shirtless photo of like one half of his chest.
If you're having a bad day and you need a laugh, something to make you feel better, just go through the files, except the one Raven mentioned. Please do not look at that.
Yeah, it's not like the Drake video, if anyone knows that, but like...
We're on the same page.
It's not what you want to be looking at if you're looking for F1 content, but they're running with it, so that means we can too. Oliver, if you...
And the very next day. And I can't do it. Is that
you
like my
do it on com- you can't do it on
yeah. No.
Something like that.
One day later, on the 1st of March, the situation has been going on for almost a month now. F1 and the FIA meet in Bahrain to continue talking about the situation. You know, they're starting to come to a consensus on everything that's going on.
They're starting to really see, like, okay, this is not just a small issue.
Preparing to potentially make a comment on it.
2 days later, this is where things start to get really juicy for...
Kind of branches out from just Christian Horner
to everyone at Red Bull, where on March 3rd, Jos Verstappen was quoted in the Daily Mail that the team is going to explode if Christian Horner stays the team principal of Red Bull. And this is where we first hear the idea that Max might not stay with Red Bull for his whole contract because of these actions.
Which you have to remember, Max's contract after this year keeps him there for another 5 seasons.
Remember when I told you at the beginning of this timeline to remember why the Dutch media was important? It is suspected that Jos was the one that leaked this all to the Dutch media, which
I think is so funny.
It's, oh my God, it really just proves that the paddock is like high school clique drama.
I'm not a big Jos Verstappen fan, but
I also like leaving my child at a gas station.
Will not be parenting like that.
We will
just
not be
so
parenting
know.
Like Jos Verstappen.
So
Project
I will not
Verstappen
be having,
is not happening.
I will not be having a 3-time world champion as a child. My apologies to my parents. I know you would love a grandson to
and
be that successful.
World
but
champion.
To be a Formula One world champion. But yeah, a few days later, on March 7th, the accuser at Red Bull is suspended. And according to Express UK, she was reportedly suspended based on the evidence she provided in the investigation.
Red Bull. I'm looking at you right here.
Yeah. Okay.
Not a good move. She was suspended without pay.
You're trying to sweep her under the rug.
She was suspended without pay. So she was still getting paid for the time off. During that time, I believe...
Oh, it was a paid suspension, you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
They're not going to just like... You're doing the right thing. We're going to punish you. Like that would have really made people mad, especially in National Women's Month. So
true.
It just doesn't look good as Red Bull. Like, I understand you're trying to space out, you know, the accuser and the accused, but maybe give Jesus, I'm blanking on his name, Horner, like a leave of absence for a week. Like,
yeah, I'm surprised they didn't do that with him. That you can put an interim team principal in for a week. Like, that's not difficult
but
to do.
To suspend an actual employee who is coming out with claims that she was uncomfortable or sexually harassed or anything like this, it's...
I mean, you should be encouraging people to speak about those things, not
shove it under the rug and
for that
make,
kind of stuff.
Yeah, set the standard. But March 8th, one day later, Helmut Marko, I don't know why it says Marky on our document, suggests that he was facing suspension by Red Bull, linked to the investigation and as a source of potential information leaks. Max Verstappen and Jos both defended Marko, and Max even said that if Marko left, I would be leaving in a heartbeat, which... Oh boy.
Marco's not a favorite man of people in the F1 world as fans, but leave my boy out of this.
He's also someone that a lot of these guys look up to and have a lot of respect for. The Liam Lawson clip of talking about Marko and like...
I mean, dude, there's a reason why half the grid is comprised of Red Bull Juniors.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, that is a huge point in itself. Thank you for saying that. But
oh yeah.
I think you can't like point him out and be like, okay, he's too good at his job. But at the same time, if he's playing a favorite in a company where there's already power struggles between the two owners of the company, the team principal, and then the GM of the team.
And the partners of the association.
And the partner, yeah. Like, yeah, that's a huge power struggle and people are going to start picking sides. And I saw a really cool like spider graph. Showing
dude, no way
like,
somebody made a whole spider.
Oh, dude, it was like power struggles, just like doesn't like each
Red
other.
Red Bull.
But wait,
okay, doesn't like each other. What is this? Some drawing in eighth grade that we're passing around the back of the classroom.
It's like power struggle. Like distaste or distrust in one another was another one. But another, like the one thing that it showed was like both drivers really care about Marco. Yeah. And I think both drivers wouldn't be too mad if Christian Horner got the boot. Personally,
dude, I feel like Sergio Perez would be even more accepting.
Yeah, dude, I think Sergio Perez would be excited because
I might be able to stay next year.
That was another thing I wanted to pull up, but I'll get to that later. March 15th, Horner's accuser appeals the Red Bull verdict, and a day later, on what was that, Saturday? Yeah. She also filed the complaint with the FIA. Now, these
on St. Paddy's weekend.
Yeah, well, they don't really celebrate that over there.
True.
But
I do.
Shut up. I mean, there's obviously going to be so much more happening in this. I mean, there was a rumor that Horner would be fired by Red Bull before the Australian Grand Prix. But that was later just to be a complete rumor by German media. But yeah. I don't know. I think in general, I really do believe that we could see two new Red Bull drivers in the next 2 years, just based off the events that have happening in the current state of everything at Red Bull. Because if Helmut leaves, that means Max is leaving.
Christian Horner doesn't know how to be a loyal husband. How about Fernando Alonso to Mercedes? Yeah, those two things are connected.
I have that point down here, which honestly we can just
We'll get into it.
No, let's go there right now. You already brought up Alonso.
I was just thinking about how this is all so interconnected.
It really is, just because there is so much happening. But some keen-eyed fans noticed that in the last week, Alonso was back in England, I believe, and he was at a coffee shop which printed his first WDC win, like picture of him.
Oh, really? Like
on the latte.
That's so
it's really
cool. That's really
cool. And people
cool.
were like, "Oh, this is cool. He's just shouting out them for doing this thing." Like 20 minutes later, Toto Wolff and Mercedes post, and people realize that they are at the same bar.
Oh,
and now I'm not saying spicy. I'm not saying that they were even talking, but
yeah,
the one thing I did see online, which is a valid point, was, do you think rich people just go to the same place? Which valid?
It's a valid thing.
Why
to say.
Would you know? Aston Martin is located in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
So is Mercedes, even though they're a German team. Doesn't make sense to me. But in theory, you already have George and Fernando hanging out on New Year's the last 2 years.
Yep.
They're already close friends. That's good. I don't know if you saw Ferrari and Lewis, but Lewis was signing Ferrari merch and smiling at people.
Dude, so would I.
He had the biggest grin. He just...
Dude, I'd be so excited to get in that car next year if I was him.
It's really crazy. I mean, Alonso's doing great in Aston Martin right now. They had fifth place after, you know, being the fourth fastest car, and, you know, with Stroll hitting the wall
hitting
early.
The wall, yeah.
But Aston Martin, the car's not doing great. It's doing better than last year, though, which that's all you can ask for as a team that's still relatively new.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. I genuinely do think Toto, I know George Russell has also mentioned this in an interview where he's like, he was hanging out with Toto a lot on the off season, and yes, they have a driver's seat opening. That
I was going to say, it also seems as though they just get along really well, Toto and Fernando.
I just genuinely think it's like that layer of respect between the two of being competitors for so long, but also just being like, okay, I know you guys are good. I know you're good too.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be in communications here. And something I saw was George Russell said to the media where he's like, oh, it's so funny hanging out with Toto and seeing all these drivers' names light up on his phone because, you know, they're trying to find a partner. So
is Toto Wolff the plug?
Plug.
He's the car plug.
going back to Red Bull for one quick second, congrats on them for officially passing Williams in total race wins at 115. I believe they are now the fourth.
You have Ferrari at the top with 243. You have McLaren in second with, if I'm right, 182. And then you have Mercedes with 125.
Will you stall for a second while I search it up?
Yeah, if I just ripped those off correctly, I'm going to be... Oh, I was so close. I said Ferrari 243. I said McLaren 182 and Mercedes 125. I was one off. McLaren has 183 wins. Daniel Ricciardo, Italy 2021 is the one race I forgot. That was close. I'm actually very impressed.
So congrats
that I had that
on
off
them.
The riff.
I mean, it's still crazy to think about that Williams has been, if I'm not mistaken, like since the 80s?
70s.
70s? Okay.
Yeah.
They've been around for 50 years.
Red Bull has been around since 2006.
20. So, yeah, good for Red Bull for being a little bit of a devil advocate. But another thing I saw, Adrian Newey is not too happy with Red Bull, and he's already been kind of feeling out the grid on where he
Yeah, didn't we mention he was in talks with Ferrari?
I don't think we mentioned it. I think we just said that he's in talks, which I believe there were some talks of Ferrari
I'm just trying to manifest it, you know?
Yeah, it's fine. Ferrari is actually going after, like, three major...
High-level Red Bull.
Head of Aero, head of production, and one other. So Red Bull is seemingly losing pieces because of all this turmoil, and the other teams definitely seem like they're going
to
get
they're
a little
better. They're trying to snipe
the pieces. Say, they're going to get a little bit better with every single person that they pick up. Let's go to Audi.
Wait, does this mean Red Bull's going to become the sister team to VCar?
They break the budget cap.
Dude,
again, maybe.
That was actually a thing in the late 2000s, though. Like, there was a couple years where the at the time, Toro Rosso was genuinely better than the Red Bull.
Well, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Well, yeah, but just like in hindsight, looking at it retrospectively, it is so funny. And I don't understand
why.
Because, well, yeah. And maybe that's just because it was so early.
Do you think it's because Toro Rosso was still kind of under the mentality of the team before, where it's like, we're going to just modify this car,
you know,
and Red Bull kind of came out with their own car to design?
No, because Red Bull Red Bull was Jaguar before.
Yes.
Then they became Red Bull. Toro Rosso was Minardi, and then they became...
Minardi was the...
One of the worst cars on the grid.
Obviously, but wasn't that Ferrari's, like, lower team or no?
I don't know. Well, I know it's Italian.
I know it was
I know
Italian.
They're based in Faenza, if I know correctly. They're still based there, actually. One of the... what's it called? I guess terms when the Red Bull family bought that team was that they had to keep the team base there. So that's why VCarb is still based out of Italy. That's where their factory is.
That makes sense.
I totally just went on a tangent, but... yeah.
Let's go to Audi real quick because this was kind of talk over the last week. Audi's going in 100% after initially only going to be going in 75% and letting the current Sauber team principal keep 25% of the company. And then they would slowly just keep buying it out. That was the original plan, but as some events have happened in the last year with Sauber and Stake and their legal issues, Audi is now going to be buying 100% of the company with Andreas Seidel becoming the F1 Audi CEO, and they are still searching for, I believe, the person that will be doing more of the business side.
What about like team principal? Or are they saying Andreas Seidel will be the...
I don't think he'll be team principal, but he potentially could be a CEO and team principal just because he's a team principal right now.
I miss Andrea, yeah. Yeah, I would love that.
They just have to be bought out before 2026 to be considered a full works team. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been able to even compete in 2026.
Or would they have been, I believe, they might have been forced to pick up an engine from somebody else.
Yeah.
Then. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing is Audi's making their engine.
Yep.
So they're currently working on making their first F1 engine.
Sort
and
of a whole new engine manufacturer on the grid,
which is exciting.
You won't see anybody using Audi engines in 2026.
I could see Haas potentially going to Audi engines.
I don't know. Their ties with Ferrari are so large, and I don't know if somebody would want to jump ship from an engine like that the first year.
That's just to, yeah, to see how it...
Like, I wouldn't see somebody like an Aston Martin ditching a Mercedes engine to just try an Audi engine the first year it gets instituted. I feel like that's too risky. But, you know, it's a new set of regulations, all that kind of stuff, and maybe you could have like a Red Bull 2010 kind of thing. You could have a Mercedes with the turbo hybrids. So who knows? Maybe somebody would do that, and that would be insane if that worked.
Sticking with Haas for a second, even though we're not really talking about Haas, everyone knew that Behrmann did absolutely fantastic for his debut for Ferrari.
F1 won't actually stop shutting up about it on all their social medias. You know, I'm a Behrmann fan. I was a Behrmann fan, but F1, like, beat a dead horse. Like, they've posted about him every single day for the past, like, week and a half.
The video of him being like, I have no friends, and then Charles and Lewis coming up and hanging with him, like, 10 times. And it is a very sweet video.
It is.
And to be in his spot, yeah, I wouldn't realize, like, I wouldn't think I would have any friends if I'm just moving up to an F1 grid after competing on F2 and knowing all those guys and kind of idolizing these people too.
Absolutely.
Like he said last week, he got a text from Seb, one of his idols, before the race. And he was said like, that was so cool. That made my weekend type thing.
Dude, the day he was born, Fernando Alonso was standing on an F1 podium.
Yeah.
Like that guy is my idol. Like I was born and was taught to follow this guy.
It's pretty crazy.
But it's like, yeah, just F1's beating a dead horse. Like, you're killing the hype by not shutting up about it.
They'll give it next race week, and it'll go under the rug. But it is very, very possible that Haas will have him in the seat replacing K-Mag.
I would say K-Mag over Hulk. I think Hulk is a more complete driver. But, like, even as close
going
as
to
next
Audi,
year.
Correct?
No, K-Mag. No. K-Mag will be out of the sport.
Hulk? K-Mag. Who's going? Oh, Sainz is going to Audi. Sainz, That's what it is.
I don't expect Hulk or K-Mag to be in the sport for the 26 regulations, but I do expect to see one of them there next year to mentor Oliver Behrmann. That's what I think the likely outcome is going to be of that.
After Daniel Ricciardo's spin last week, which Sergio Perez actually got to watch. I don't know if you saw that. He was behind him.
Oh, he was lapping him.
He was lapping him. And, you know, if you're Sergio Perez, you got to feel a little good about seeing Daniel Ricciardo spin on him by himself. So.
Yeah, I feel bad for Danny.
Yeah. I mean, he just needs to get his groove back.
It's his own fault, but like.
He just needs to get his groove back. And he's getting there slowly. But I don't know if he'll ever be what he was.
I don't think he will.
We
can riff into some of the Mercedes struggles.
Oh my God, dude. This graphic is so insightful. So obviously we know the slowest cars on the grid are...
Your Alpines, your Williams,
Sauber. Now, if I told you that Mercedes was the slowest car...
In cornering speed and...
And race pace overall. It was one of the bottom three. It was only Haas and Sauber did worse than them, but it was only by like hundredths of a second.
Yeah.
But going into Jeddah turn 7, Mercedes entry speed was about 261 kilometers, and at the apex, they were already down to 228. If you go up to the top of the where with Red Bull and Ferrari and McLaren, are entering at 268.
7 kilometers faster. That's almost a DRS flap open faster.
But then the apex, this is where it gets crazy. Red Bull, 244. Ferrari, 240. Aston Martin, 238.
Yeah, Red Bull are 16 kilometers an hour faster at the apex of the corner. That is, wow.
And it is partially because of the driving style of the car. It's a very front. Oliver's throwing things. Very front heavy car where you just kind of swing the back to get it into place. That's why Max is such a good driver, and he can corner these way, way better than anyone who has a line with better grip. That's why he can gain 23 seconds over a race. It's actually really, really fascinating. Slowest race pace, not looking good. I mean, I know Ferrari's already talked about bringing upgrades to
Italy, they said that they're actually going to be doing a very severe
upgrade package,
like, and like risky type.
Where like, and I'm okay with it.
I was gonna say,
I'm so there for it.
If they're taking risks as being the second best team right now, I think that's just gonna make it way more exciting for the grid overall.
Yeah.
Because say it fails and McLaren comes out with a great upgrade and Aston Martin comes out with a great upgrade, now the whole paddock and the whole championship is spread out a little differently. So.
And the Ferrari fans cry like they always do. I'm not wearing a Ferrari team shirt or anything.
It's okay. I'll green screen it out. That's kind of it for general paddock news. We'll go into some of our other discretions of racing for a little bit, even though there wasn't almost anything that happened in the last week of racing. So, yeah. I'll let you kind of get into it.
Into the World Endurance Championship. There was some speculation that WEC could return to Indianapolis. I know they, for the past few years, they've been racing at Sebring for their American race. This year, they're racing at Circuit of the Americas. But there was the chance that they could move to Indianapolis at some point, which would be really cool, on the inner road circuit. However, that ended up getting denied, which is kind of disappointing. And then you have Lamborghini Motorsport boss Senna departing from the team. So I'm interested to see who they kind of find to replace him. And then you have Cadillac and Fanassi splitting after this season into separate WEC and IMSA teams.
Which is cool.
Yeah,
I think more competition in those kind of rougher, I wouldn't say rougher, but less watched discretions of motorsport.
Yeah.
It's just going to make it a little more exciting.
I was going to say, speaking of Sebring and IMSA, not that we've talked about IMSA on here before, but we had the 12 hours of Sebring in IMSA yesterday. I can't remember the winning team off the top of my head. However, I do know that Colton Herta was on that winning team. I believe he's racing dually in both IMSA and IndyCar this year.
Cadillac Racing was the first entrant. And let's see, for Jeep, for what class were you thinking?
I was thinking GTP.
Yeah, GTP was Wellen Cadillac Racing with driver Pipo Derani.
That's qualifying.
Oh.
But anyways, the reason I tuned into it was because Romain Grosjean was switching over to the series this year, and he was driving for Lamborghini in IMSA, and I just wanted to see how he ended up doing.
Taylor Racing with Andretti with the team Lewis Delatraz, Colton Herta, and Jordan Taylor.
I have no idea who Jordan Taylor is. Louis Delatraz, I remember seeing him in F2 years ago. And then Colton Herta obviously was linked to F1 like a year or two ago.
Jordan Taylor looks like he won the 24 Hours of Daytona in 2017. So
experienced racer.
Experienced driver.
But then, you had Romain Grosjean finishing P7 with Lamborghini for his first IMSA race, which I thought was pretty impressive. I think he's always been, decent behind the wheel, but this is my first time seeing him drive a non-Formula car. So I was interested to see how that would go, and he ended up doing pretty well. So I was happy with that. I remember when Kevin Magnussen also did a year in IMSA when he was away from F1. That was in 2021 when you had Mazepin and Schumacher at the team. He took a win. I can't remember what track it was at, but he fared very well in those cars, which was super nice to see. But yeah, not too much going on in the WEC and IMSA world, but
you got 3 days and 31 minutes till MotoGP, GP of Portugal, so that will be exciting.
At, I believe, Portimao, which F1 raced at a couple years during COVID, just like Turkey.
Ooh.
With how we talked about last week. Portimao is a super cool circuit. If you ever played the F1 games, it's one of those legacy circuits that's on there now. It's a really cool track. A lot of undulation, all that kind of stuff. So I would very much like to see the MotoGP bikes go around there. I think that'll be really cool.
The last thing I want to talk about is how watched are each discretion of racing? Because I saw a really cool graphic about this, and I want to get your opinion on what you think out of WRC, NASCAR, Indy, F1, MotoGP, and WEC. Like, what's the order of viewership in your opinion?
So I would I'm trying to think. I would put WEC. Sorry, I'd put F1 at number one. Mm-hmm. Without a doubt, I would put WEC at number two. I think WEC, it's tough because I know almost nobody in America watches endurance racing. I love endurance racing. I know Europe loves endurance racing, but I'd put WEC at number two. I'm trying to think. I would actually put NASCAR at number three because I think American fans are actually crazy about it. IndyCar is going to be close to the bottom. I think MotoGP will be close to the bottom as well. But I'd say top three would be F1, WEC, and then NASCAR.
So I'm pulling up the graphic to show you, but IMSA is the bottom. And then
DTM.
Yeah. Yep. Well, like that, those don't really count. I'll get to the one. WEC is the bottom. WEC is the least watched discretion out of all of the ones I let you know. IndyCar and NASCAR are bigger than WEC.
I could see NASCAR potentially being bigger.
NASCAR is quite a bit bigger. The other thing is...
That's incredible. Formula E is bigger than
IndyCar. This
I call
is such
BAS. Okay, but here... Okay, you have to think, though. Le Mans is one of the most watched racing events of the entire year.
But I'll counter with Rally is more popular in Europe and has a bigger history with A Group B, Monte Carlo, and all of these original rallies that started in like the 1920s. So they have a way bigger history of it overall. But the thing that I really wanted to show you is like where we get into here. It's like it goes from rally to NASCAR. It's like, okay, that's a step.
I'm not surprised NASCAR is the biggest.
MotoGP and then F1. MotoGP is the second most watched discretion of racing in the world, which to an American, we don't really hear MotoGP that much. But I know for a fact, a lot of places in South America absolutely love MotoGP.
I like MotoGP. I just didn't know it was that large. That's actually incredible.
It's almost half of F1, which for someone who's doing half the... I mean, F1's also the biggest brand in the world.
Hey, it is the pinnacle of motorsport.
But it's a really cool graphic. I'll probably throw it up in the YouTube video just to let you guys see too and give them credit. But
yeah, absolutely.
Anything else for us today, Oliver?
Not too much for me, but I do have to get ready to regulate this sleep schedule so I can stay up at midnight to watch the Australian GP this week.
It's nice that school's going to be done, that I can actually sleep.
Absolutely. So it's nice that I made it through the St. Paddy's Day work weekend, so I won't have to work, you know, 30 hours in 2 days this weekend. I can actually relax and watch some racing again. I'm super happy about it.
We're super excited.
But be ready. The next couple race weekends, they're all going to be super late. You've got midnight for Australia, you have midnight for Japan, and you have 1 a.m. for the Chinese GP.
It's crazy. I think that's going to wrap it up for us today. Go check out all the other shows on Aletheia. Good Morning Hockey will be coming out a little bit later. Check us out on YouTube. Check us out on wherever you get your podcasts.
Whether that be Spotify or Apple Music.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Oliver. We will see you guys next week. Bye-bye. Make sure you click subscribe. It's going to be right here. Other video is going to be somewhere above here. So
right on my face, guys.
No. Anyways, you guys have a good one.
Guys.
Bye, everyone.